Colin James, welcome to the show. A huge thank you for coming on today.
You bet.
20 studio albums, 8 Juno Awards, 27 Maple Blues Awards, and multi-platinum record sales. When you hear those accomplishments, those awards, how does it make you feel? Is it still surreal, even after all these years?
Well, not. I mean, it is in the way that when you start to do this, like anyone who starts to do this, hoping that you can do it for 10 years, 5 years, 2 years. And, you know, I started being in bands when I was 10 or 11, 12 years old. I mean, I think my first band was really when I was 13, when I was in a full-on multi-instrument band. You know, you see other people go through it, and you start by getting paid. Like, if you get paid at all, you get paid $1,000 a week to play some club somewhere. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
So it's a long haul. And but now it's kind of become what I've done for so long that when I'm not doing it, it feels weird. But do you lose being grateful? No. I mean, the industry changes and how you go about making a living changes a little bit. But I love it, man. And it's like, I remember years ago talking to Joni Mitchell because for a while I got to know her when she was kind of spending some time up here in Vancouver. And a friend of mine was kind of a close friend of hers. And then, you know, I remember her talking to me. She says, "Well, are you a lifer?" And I went, "I never really thought." I was only about, when she asked me that, I was only about 28 or 30 years old. And,
right.
I don't know what I answered. I think so. I said, "I think so." But once it gets in you, man, it's often what I've said to people is don't do it because you want to, do it because you have to.
Right.
Yeah.
Along with you know, many other Canadians, have grown up listening to your music and just preparing for this interview. It's been such a treat because you've had such a big career and continue to have such a big career. Let's go back to the 80s for a second. You're in your early 20s and you open up for one of the all-time greats, Stevie Ray Vaughan. Tell me about that experience and about that time in your life.
Well, you know, I should preface it by just kind of saying it didn't happen out of nowhere. Had I not already opened up for John Lee Hooker, and had I not already opened up for George Thurgood, so a promoter knew that I could rise to that occasion, I probably wouldn't have got that gig. So, you know, it was like I'd already moved to Vancouver. And I guess when I opened up for John Lee Hooker, I was 16. And I think around between 17 and 18, I did 3 shows opening for George Thurgood, Back of the Prairies,
right.
Winnipeg, Regina, and Saskatoon. And by that point, I'd moved to Vancouver. And to be honest, you know, I was really broke, man. I was like, kind of everywhere I've gone in the different cities I've ended up in over, especially in that time, I played on the street corners. I played in front of liquor board stores. I did all that. Worked at car washes, you know. And I had really gone home to Saskatchewan just to really take a breath because I was so broke out here in Vancouver that I was living hand-to-mouth, living in this awful apartment. And I got a guy I was playing with went for a more experienced guitar player for a showcase he had because he was from San Francisco and a record company called Flying Fish, and they were coming up to see his showcase in Vancouver. And he says, "Colin, I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to go with guitar players a little," because, you know, he loved me, but I was a kid still.
Right.
I was 18.
Young, yeah.
Young. And he says, "You know, I really got to look into the record company. I know this is going to kind of hurt, but I'm going to have to use this 35-year-old for this gig, you know."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "All right, I get it." So I tail between my legs. I thought, you know, I'm just going to go back to Saskatchewan for a week, borrow some money off my mom, you know, try to get my breath back, you know.
Right.
And I was home for 2 days and I got a call. And it was the same promoter who put me in front of those other shows 2 years previous. And he said, "Hey, can you put a band together tomorrow?" And I said, "Man, I've been living out of town. I don't even know anyone here anymore." Like, I said, give me 10 minutes and I'll see. And everyone I phoned couldn't make it. And I finally phoned my friend in Saskatoon. I said, "Listen, I got I'm supposed to be there playing the Centennial. It's a big auditorium. It's a 2,000-seater. And I said, I have to be there tomorrow. What do you suggest I do? He says, phone the Saskatoon Jazz Society. So I phoned the Saskatoon Jazz Society, and they hooked me up with two way older than me guys. But it was good because they knew how to play jazz and shuffle and a drummer and a bass player. And they showed up at 5 o'clock, and we went in this little room and started rehearsing, and Stevie Ray Vaughan bust into the room. I should have mentioned that it was Stevie Ray Vaughan I got a gig for. And they told me, do you want to open up for Stevie Ray Vaughan tomorrow night? And I said, I'd love to, but I don't have a band, you know. So anyway, we had about half an hour rehearsal, and then Stevie jumped into, right into our room and said, is it true what I heard? And I said, well, it depends what you heard. And he says, did you guys all just meet? And I said, I'm afraid so. And he thought that was hilarious. And he kind of just joked with us a bit and split. And next thing you know, I'm playing, and I broke two strings immediately. And I had no guitar tech, no one with me, no infrastructure around me at all. Basically, I threw an amp in the back of the car, you know.
Right.
And one guitar. So next thing I know, Stevie Ray Vaughan's guitar tech is handing me Stevie's guitar. And because I had hidden behind a PA stack, and I was just looking at Stevie's crew going, what do I do? I have no more strings. I got two strings broken. I don't know what to do. So they were kind of forced their hand, I suppose. But it was hilarious. And then that night, Stevie got me on for the encores and got me up the next night in Regina, my hometown, and then asked me if I wanted to go on the road with them. And
wow.
And it, unbelievably, I said, I would love to, but I'm playing with a harmonica player in Vancouver. And I phoned my hey, I say, the story goes on and on. The point is, it was an amazing night. And
it worked out.
It worked out, and about a year and a half later, or a year later, I was playing with somebody else. I was playing with Billy Cowsill of the band The Cowsills, which was an American family band. And Billy was kind of the black sheep of the family. He's the guy who sang the original Hair. Anyway, I was playing with him at the time, and then I got a call, and the promoter had asked, Stevie had asked for me if I was available to play those Alberta shows. So I jumped in the car, put a band together of people I didn't know again, and Edmonton, Calgary did the same thing. And from then on, I went to the States with Stevie.
That is amazing. And then soon after that, I guess not soon after that, but a little bit after that, of course, you wrote your first album, one of the fastest-selling Canadian albums in history, which is incredible. And you wrote a lot of that. Is writing something that's always come naturally to you? How has your writing sort of changed from that early days into now?
That's kind of a multi-pronged question, because when I first got signed, to be honest with you, I had a contract that stated I had to have 8 out of 10 originals to get any publishing money in advance. So it wasn't the best contract for a guy like me. I'd only written 5 long years at the time, you know? So I wouldn't advise a contract like that for someone like me. I think it was an ill-advised contract. However, I had no choice. I had to write all 8 out of 10 songs, and that's what I did. I never thought to be a writer. You know, I think there's some people out there who go, I'm a writer. I know I'm a writer. That's what I do. I'm a stylist, you know, and I just wanted to be a little bit like Carlos Santana, a little bit like Jimi Hendrix. I just wanted to play the guitar. And be like my heroes. Whether I love singing, but songwriting wasn't really something I'd considered. And I've become more at peace with it over the years. I just got back from writing songs with Tom Wilson and Kara Lightfoot. I was just at their place just yesterday out in Hamilton. I'm in Vancouver now. And I love it now. I love it when you're with a bunch of people. I mean, I don't mind writing by myself. I do that occasionally, too. But it's pretty exciting when you have 3 to 4 people in a room whose sole intent is to make something cool.
Right.
It's neat because you get someone who everyone kind of brings their talent. And it's, you know, songwriting is, it's just an ongoing process, and sometimes you win and sometimes you lose. And if you can, you got to be able to handle the disappointment of starting something that's not always going to be great. And but that's part of it, right?
Yeah, that's, and you kind of touched on something else. You said about that you kind of wanted to kind of try different things at first. Blues, I think, is one of those genres that really has an influence and touch on a lot of different musical styles. What drew you to that style of music?
Well, from the age of 13 to 16, I mostly played Appalachia and fiddle tunes. I actually put down the guitar when I was about 13 and picked up a mandolin, and I only played mandolin for years, three years, until I was about 16. And I saw James Cotton at a big outdoor festival. I mean, I'd already liked, my mom and dad listened to Sonny Terry Brown and McGee and the Staple Singers and the Supremes. Mm-hmm. They were more on the folk side of things, Odetta, you know, Pete Seeger.
Right.
Early Bob Dylan, not electric Bob Dylan.
Right.
Mom and dad were more folky than that. But my older brother was a Hendrix fan and all that. But I saw Cotton, and it was at the Winnipeg Folk Festival, and I was about 16, and it just blew my mind. You know, maybe I was 15. I think 1981, and I couldn't believe how much energy the music had, how much soul the music had. Cotton didn't have the most amazing voice, but the way he used his voice, it didn't matter because his soul was behind it, you know? And I think I realized that there was something in there for me then. And from then on, I became a purist for years.
Right.
I'm less of a purist now. You know, I'll listen to Radiohead or I'll listen to Beck as often as I'll listen to Muddy Waters, you know?
Yeah.
But for a while, I was really narrow focused, you know.
Your latest album, Open Road, came out in 2021. Listening to that album, I sensed lots of themes of freedom moving forward. Did the pandemic influence those feelings in any way when you were putting that together?
Absolutely. I mean, like we talked from the beginning, you know, when you're used to doing this all the time and you spend 2 years sitting around not having any feedback from an audience, because you've been doing that all your life.
Yeah.
It's, you know, I did some of those shows where it was no audience and it was virtual.
Yeah.
It was so empty. Like, I remember coming home, we played the Commodore, where I'm used to having people, you know, hanging off,
right.
Yeah, I mean, rocking, you
right.
know? And we played it to nobody. And I remember getting home and just saying, well, that was useless.
Mm.
You know, what a waste of time that was, you know? So I don't know. I think all of us in this industry, especially the music industry, you know, it was really tough times. A lot of people dived out of the industry. A lot of people quit because it was just financially ruining. I mean, 2 years of no income, you know, and
yeah.
pretty hard.
Oh, for sure. It's good that you're back on the road and back to live audiences. You're heading to Nova Scotia very soon.
Yeah.
And you're going to be at the Lighthouse Arts Center in Halifax on October 1st. If people have never seen a Colin James show, a live show, what are they in for?
Well, it's energy, I suppose. We're just having such a good time. You know, we've had a really exciting couple of years. We've got to play, you know, we got to play all through the States with Buddy Guy. As soon as the pandemic opened, I did like 40 shows in a row with Buddy down in the States. And, you know, we try to, you know, play old songs, but try to keep it fresh by playing some newer stuff too. Now there's 20 records and I'm going back in November.
One more question for you, Colin. I really appreciate your time for coming on here. What's something that you want to, you know, if somebody says your name, Colin James, what do you want them to know about your music? What's the one thing that you kind of want to be known for or remembered for? What is that? Your writing, your style? What are you thinking?
Jeez, man, that's really hard. I mean, the people I've always loved, as far as my fandom is concerned, is like Otis Rush, for instance. You know, Otis Rush was a hell of a guitar player, but Otis Rush was a hell of a singer and a stylist. You know, he had a voice like you knew it was Otis Rush as soon as you heard him. And I guess, you know, after this long doing it, you just hope that I guess you try to bring something that you try to bring your energy and your passion. You know, at the end of the day, that's it. You know, you're not kidding around.
Right.
I guess that's the idea. You can have fun, but I take it very seriously when it comes to just what I do and my passion for it. I love it, and I try to bring that love to it.
Great. Well, Colin, thank you so much.
Okay, man. Have a great day.